Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 197 of the show. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Ben Badler, as always. What's up, Ben? How you doing?
I'm good, Carlos. Got to see some of the 18U USA baseball trials, getting some look at some of these 2027s.
You like, first real glances at 2027 for me so far. So that's been good to see.
You like my guy, Dylan Seward? My guy, as if like I'm the only one who is going to like this guy.
Yeah, my guy in 2019 was Bobby Witt Jr. I was notably the guy who like found out about him and surfaced him to the world. Yeah, he's pretty good. Stealing home, showing some elite run times, making a lot of contact, looking the part at shortstop. Yeah, he's looked pretty good. I will say that.
Run. It's all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just leave that part out.
Yeah, no, he's been pretty electric. Definitely seems to have lived up to your number one prospect in the class billing, Ben. So
our last four number one prospects 1 year out from the draft have been Max Clark, Connor Griffin, Ethan Holiday, and Grady Emerson. And three of those four guys were the first high school player drafted in their draft year. And Ethan the fourth was Ethan Holiday.
Among high school.
You're right.
And if you want to say bonus. He got the biggest bonus, so there you go.
So it's I'm a real genius for being able to figure out the very, very elite player in the class. So, but it is, I think that's pretty nice, pretty good track record so far on those guys. I don't think Dylan Seward is going to disappoint many people.
No, so far he has not. But we're back with the mailbag episode today. I know it's been a little bit since we have had one of these on the feed. I know you guys appreciate them. So we're excited to get back into the mix on our end here. So I guess let's just hop into them, Ben, unless you have more to say on the top of the show here.
No, let's get going.
All right. We've got a question from Will T. Dodge on Instagram, who asks, are teams shifting pitcher draft evaluations from game stats, whiffs/zone, to pitch stats, like stuff plus, etc.? I think they're probably just using everything they can get their hands on, realistically. Like, I don't know that because teams maybe have more stuff plus numbers or advanced pitching kind of data, especially for college players, that they don't think it's useful to look at like whiff rates. I think most at the amateur level, whiff rates, I think, are some of the better numbers you can still look at. Like, I think I'm sure teams have a better way of translating stuff plus numbers from the amateur scale to the pro scale and like projecting out movement and correcting for calibration issues and the different seams of the baseball. Like, there's a lot of noise, I will say, in those like stuff plus numbers at the college level, that smart analysts, I'm sure, understand how to translate that effectively and project it effectively. But I do think like whiffs and pitching numbers, strikeout rates are still really effective. If you're striking out more batters than everyone else in college baseball, there's a decent chance that you're a pretty good pitching prospect. In fact, I actually just happened to look at like the top strikeout to walk rate pitchers over the last 3 or 4 years, maybe since like 2021, and the top 10 names are all like legitimate pitching prospects now at the major league level, or are some of the best pitching prospects in the game. So I think that it's not like a one or another situation. Any team who's using stuff plus and advanced modeling, I would think are pretty happy to use more basic or traditional performance sort of statistics as well. That's kind of my thought on this question. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I think it's a blend of the different options they were talking about, in addition just going out and watching these pitchers and how they perform, or not necessarily the performance itself, but just more traditional scouting, watching guys, or whether it's at the park or on video. Teams have access to pretty much every pitch if you're, you know, Division I pitcher, especially to, you know, like an SEC, ACC type school, every single pitch that you threw to be able to go and watch it. So I think they're looking at that, but then they're also looking at, okay, what are the developmental opportunities here? Okay, this guy's pitch might not grade out well right now in terms of whether it's a stuff plus model or in terms of the whiff rates or whatever metric you're using, but you see something where it's, okay, this is something that we think can be fixable. This is correctable for this player. And we think, okay, with if we can make these tweaks, whether it's changing some sort of silly grip maybe that a pitcher is using, or something about the way he's releasing the ball, something mechanical, teams are looking at that as well. So I think it's just a combination of it. I do think it's maybe shifting more toward evaluating a pitcher based on not just raw stuff. I don't want to put it that way. Although when I look at like the Carson Wiggins pick for the Mets, like maybe that is for certain teams are trending that way.
Yeah.
But it also like, it really blends with a lot of traditional scouting anyway, right? Like right. That is for years, you know, if you go back 15 years, you would say, oh, like a lot of the newer teams are looking at, you know, pitching, like, you know, just stat more analytical stats with that time was like strikeout rate, walk rate, that kind of stuff. Whereas more traditionally you'd look at a pitcher stuff. Now it's like, all right, we've almost come full circle where it's like, yeah, that's not, I mean, it is newer in terms of our ability to maybe using a lot of the TrackMan data that's available, or Hawkeye data that's available to teams now that obviously wasn't there 15 years ago, but it's not necessarily new in terms of how or
what you're valuing.
Yeah. Or what you're emphasizing in terms of how you're projecting a player into the future.
Yeah. I do think one note that maybe is changing, or is at least becoming more useful for how teams are both scouting and developing their players. I did a piece on this before the draft, just talking about like the differences in how teams are handling high school pitchers, how they're handling college pitchers. And one thing that does seem to be really key, I don't know if this was mentioned specifically in the question, but a team's ability to get high speed video data and just see how the ball is coming off the hand to get a better understanding of just like what will potentially play for them at the next level, what potential pitch shapes, different pitch grips, like you said, Ben, and then also force plate data, like how, like the biomechanics of how pitchers move on the mound. I think that information, those two pieces of technology, it does seem to be helping teams get a more granular understanding of what a player does well, how a player moves in space, and what are the potential developmental levers that can be pulled with that player at the next level, i.e. like he's doing this on the mound right now. We know a clean or a clear, I should say, mechanical tweak that could potentially help him unlock more power. He's releasing the ball like this because of his release and the natural way he throws. We think this assortment of pitch shapes might work for him, and we're good at developing those. Stuff like that, I think, can help you have a better understanding of what the specific player development path is going to be. And I also think like from those pieces of technology, teams can also have a pretty clear understanding of like which pitchers they want to really target and emphasize looks for during the spring, and which maybe they think, okay, this is a mechanical red flag for us. This is something that we feel like we can't help a player with, or this is going to limit him in some way that we feel like we're not going to be able to get the most out of at the next level. And then you can focus on the players that have the traits that you either prioritize or you think you can help that player positively in player development. I think that's really interesting in terms of like where pitching is now.
What do you think the next one will be in terms of where analysis shifts or how teams value pitchers in particular? I can tell you my answer, which is that I think teams are going to, at some point, it depends on each team, right? But I think at some, I'm amazed at still how many teams are willing to draft pitchers who have shown that they have trouble staying healthy. Like I just mentioned Carson Wiggins, for example, and that just jumped into my mind. But I think it's easy to look like Carson Wiggins' stuff is really good, right? Like, or at least he has a couple of really, really good pitches in his arsenal. It's power stuff. And he also has a pretty significant track record of not only just limited strikes, but just not being able to stay healthy. And I think, all right, if you want to draft that guy later in the draft, totally get it. We had him ranked, 100 and something, and the Mets took him, 27, 28, something in that neighborhood. I just think that historically does not tend to tilt the probabilities in your favor, but it's easy, right? Like whether it's watching him pitch or looking at the TrackMan data, looking at other metrics that you're watching and valuing, like, okay, like that obviously jumps off the page, whether you're looking at the spreadsheet or just watching him pitch, like, yeah, that all looks really good. It's just really hard for those guys.
Yeah.
When you compound, especially when you compound strike throwing issues with a track record of not staying healthy, to project those guys to have the ability to stay healthy, especially in a starter role at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think some teams are probably already doing this, but I could see command and control, like a track record of throwing strikes, becoming more valuable if teams just continue to feel like they can help build out power and nasty breaking pitches. Like if you feel like command is kind of the contact skill for pitchers on that hitting side. We saw teams select for contact in this draft because either they feel like they can't teach that or can't train that, or it's easier to add bat speed and power and physicality in the future. I could see the same happening. Maybe there's been too much stuff hunting with stuff plus models. I could see that definitely being a ramification for all this new data. You can see just how filthy these pitchers are. But if you can't throw strikes and you can't help them throw strikes at the next level, maybe teams lean back into more command oriented pitchers. If you do feel like you're able to develop velocity and secondary is a little bit easier than control.
The emphasis on teams drafting guys who make a ton of contact is funny too, given how so many cranky older, I don't know, ex-big leaguers. Maybe just a handful of guys, but it seems to
definitely a very quite vocal minority, hopefully.
Yeah, these guys who can't hit the ball anymore, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to another question here. We got one from Doug Uno on Twitter. How are the Braves and Red Sox able to go below 75% of the first round bonus? No physicals for those guys. Yeah, so the 75% rule for the draft, how that works is if you're invited to the MLB Combine and you participate in the full medical evaluation at the Combine, then you basically have to be given 75% of slot value where you're taken. That is sort of the incentive that MLB has set up to try and get players to provide their medical information and go through the medical combine at the combine. You can go to the combine and not participate in medicals, and in which case you would not be guaranteed 75% of your slot. And I'd say from the player's perspective, there are situations where agencies just as a general rule don't want their guys doing the medical combine. They don't want to be handing over medical information to teams because they understand that teams are going to be largely using those as another piece to negotiate from on the draft, and the agents just don't want them having that much information. There are some players
submitting the medical never like boost you up the board, probably, right? Like, no, like, oh, this guy's super, super healthy.
Correct. I mean, there are probably edge cases where there are questions about specific medical situations for some players. And if the player's like, no, I'm good, like showing your medical is a good way to say, like, give teams the evidence and make them feel more comfortable. I know teams picking inside the first round for pitchers, like there's a lot of uncertainty about taking a pitcher at all if you don't go into it with the medical information. And teams can still, or players, excuse me, can still submit their own medicals to teams. If they do that, they either have to submit their medical information to all teams or they submit that medical information to MLB, who then sends it out to every team. So technically, you're not able to just submit medical information to one team if you wanted to try and force your way to a specific organization, for example. But essentially, if you are not invited to the combine or you don't go through the medical process, there's no minimum slot you have to sign for aside from the default 40% number, which if teams don't offer you 40% after selecting you because of a medical situation, then they wouldn't get a supplemental pick for not signing you, yada, yada. There's a lot of details that goes into that. Ben, is there anything that comes up that you don't think I've addressed that makes sense for this rule? Because I know it can the soccer draft rule can get overly complicated here.
So what about if you submit medicals at the combine, and does that mean a team has to sign you for at least 75%, or do they have to, like, what if you wanted to sign with a team for less than 75%, because that would still be the highest offer that you think you could get for your market, or you think that, you know, you just want to go higher in the draft, mm-hmm. or you think that team is a better fit for you, developmentally, or for whatever reason, could you submit your medical and then say, okay, but I still want to sign with this team that's going to take me higher and pay me less than 75%, but that's still a better offer than I might get otherwise.
Yeah, I think this is also a reason why some players don't want to do it, because if you're a player with a huge range, it might be better to go top 10 and sign for a sub 75% slot value bonus that could be better for you in some cases. I believe, as the rule is written, if you go through that medical process, a team has to offer you greater than 75% of the signing bonus value. And if they don't do that, there are different penalties that come from that for the club.
That's interesting.
But that is also, like, if the player doesn't sign. So I'm not sure, actually. I don't know specifically. I could, like,
it seems like you could come to an agreement where it's like, hey, like, we can only draft you here because otherwise we don't want to draft you. Let's say it's AJ Gracia, right? Like, the Braves say, hey, we want to sign all these high school pitchers later, but we can't do that if we offer you more than 75% of the pick value. But we can do it. Hey, if you want to be a top 10 pick, we'll give you this amount of money. It's not 75%, but maybe you still want to make that decision for yourself of, like, okay, hey, top 10 pick, go to the Braves, and maybe that's where you get the most money.
It would be weird to not allow that specific situation, but I don't know for sure under how the rules are written if that is, like, actually something that you're able to do or not.
Right, because you wouldn't want to put a rule into place where it's like, hey, you submitted medicals and now it's actually working against your own interest.
Well, what happens in some cases if you don't, if you're a player and you go through the medical combine and a team doesn't offer you 75%, then you become a free agent. So, like, you're going to be getting a lot more under that scenario, you would imagine. So maybe there is no scenario where a player who went through that medical would want to sign for less than 75%. I don't know. We're so far into the weeds of, like possibilities. I can't say for certain, but that generally is, like, how the rule works.
Some agent is listening to this, trying to, like, concoct some scenario.
Oh, they've done this. They've done this long before this convo.
1996 or whatever it was when those guys all became free agents.
Yeah.
So,
well, hopefully that explains a little bit more about, like, what you actually have to do to get that 75% number. Let's move on to our next question.
Todd, Father, are you hitting some games this summer? What's the deal?
Oh, of course, and it's real simple. Scotty Braun, you know how it is. You go to SeatGeek and you can find any deal you want in any section you want. Even if the game sold out, go to SeatGeek and you'll find something that you love, affordable for your family, that you can enjoy anywhere, anytime, at any ballpark and stadium you want. Enjoy it. It's the best opportunity to go see a beautiful game of baseball.
And that's the thing. You can be so last minute. SeatGeek is the official ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball. They have you covered for all of your baseball ticket needs the entire summer. They also have over 70,000 events on SeatGeek. That includes concerts, festivals, all kinds of sporting events. So go check it out right now, FT fam. The code is Territory10 for 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off with promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app, and then the code automatically is added to your account so you can use it later.
We have one from Nats Talk on Twitter. Why did the Washington Nationals go so far over slot to sign third rounder Luke Williams? I don't actually have his official bonus right now, but it sounds like he's agreed to a deal for $2.5 million. Is that right, Ben?
I think Jim Callis is, our friend Jim is saying that, yeah.
Okay, he's on that one. Yeah, slot value for the number 78 pick is just over $1 million. So significant overslot there. I mean, the short answer to your question is Luke Williams has a lot of leverage, and Luke Williams rightfully is putting out a big number in terms of like what he's going to require to sign. And if teams want to take a shot on a talent like his, they kind of have to meet the bonus demands, or else he's just going to go to college. This is generally why a lot of the high school players who are selected in the first few rounds, and we've even seen guys like Will Adams, who was an 11th rounder, he's getting $1 million. Reason he's getting paid that much is because they have big commits and they either value the commitment significantly, or they just understand that they have a lot of value for teams and they're putting out big numbers. It's costly to pay high school players. They have a lot of options in front of them if they are willing to stick to those numbers.
And this is why they're getting banned from the draft.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, the other thing too is it's not so much about, okay, how much over slot was the player getting? The teams don't think of it that way. It's just, okay, how much do we value this right. player, and can we fit him into our overall bonus pool? Because your bonus pool is basically
right.
all of the amount that is for each slot value combined right. from the top, you know, everything in the top 10 rounds. And right. then let's go out and get the best players we can get
right.
at allocating our money in different ways. And there's different intricacies, obviously, within that, but it's not so much like, oh wow, like Luke Williams got, you know, roughly 1.4, 1.5 million above the slot. It's okay, his market value, well, in this artificially compressed mm-hmm. market for Luke Williams, we think is, you know, or the Nationals fell, was 2.5 million. They thought he was worth that money. They went under slot with other picks to be able to right. make that happen. So they drafted him there. Now, whether it happens in the third round, or it happens with, you know, where did like the Red Sox drafted Martin Shalhoub in like the eighth or maybe the ninth round, something like that. You know, I'm sure that one was probably even higher.
Right. Yeah. I've got these up right now. So our biggest overslot deals that we currently have right now, Jensen Hirschkorn, Braves third rounder, he signed for essentially $4 million. Slot value for that pick at 84 overall was 973. So he's more than $3 million over slot. Martin Shalhoub, who you mentioned in the ninth round, he was almost $1.3 million over slot with his $1.5 million deal. And then the third one we have is Jace Matuszynski in the third round, 96th overall. He signed for $2 million. That's $1.18 million over slot. And you're right, like the specific number over slot means less than the bonus. And where teams are taking these players is some combination of, hey, we have to like grab this player at a certain point because we don't want someone else to take them. So you need them like if you know Jensen Hirschkorn is going to cost you $4 million and you're the Braves, you might not want to wait around till the ninth round because there could be some other team, maybe the Rangers, who signed Brody Bimila. I don't remember the exact order those two players went, but there could be another team that is perfectly happy to put a big overslot deal on the table for Hirschkorn. So there's that like metagaming aspect of it. Like you actually need to draft the player first if you want to sign him. And then, yeah, you're basically just looking at the total signing bonus, and you'll figure out how to create the savings for that with your other picks. And it's also just generally easier to do that earlier in the draft because you can then create more of the savings after the fact. So it is kind of interesting how the Red Sox did it this year, but they have a couple different guys in different rounds where they're giving big overslot deals to.
I think it's a great outcome, I would say, for Luke Williams, who really missed the summer before, came back in the fall for Jupiter and got a number that I'm very, very, very surprised to see a team ended up going that to that level for him based on where he was at a year ago.
Yeah, and I do think the biggest maybe change that could happen with the draft system, MLB's draft system, is if we ever went to a hard slotting system with pick trades, that would really change where these players are being taken, obviously, because then your ability to maneuver the board comes from your willingness to trade picks more so than how you're getting creative and how you're maneuvering your bonus pool. So as long as we have the soft slotting system and the bonus pool system, you're going to see these big signings. And I do think, like, once we have signing day, it probably will be useful just to line each team's draft class up in terms of signing bonus. That will be a much more like useful way of looking at a draft class, I think, this, because that will essentially be how teams themselves viewed the talent.
Yeah, like your fourth round pick could be like, you know, maybe a first round talent and got paid basically a first round equivalent type bonus.
Cool. Okay, we've got one other question. I think that comes from a hot sheet chat this week. I don't know who this is from exactly, but if you had to pick a player outside the top two rounds who has superstar potential, who would you say that is? I guess too much of a spicy question for us to pass up on this one. Ben, you have any first names you want to point out for this? I will say, like, outside of the first two rounds, superstar potential does get a little bit tricky. I'm sure we can find a few names, though.
I would go a few different. There's a few different guys that come to mind for me, and I'll take a guy from a couple different or a few different demographics. I'll start on the college side, and I will say Miles Bailey. Do you count that as second round, or it's like,
no, it's after the second. It's the second supplemental. Round. No, it's not true second round. So I will give it to you, and I think it would be just mean of me to take away your favorite prospect, Miles Bailey, from this. So
he's a left-handed hitting, very physical, 6'4" first baseman from Florida State, draft eligible sophomore. He has 80 raw power. I really like that pick by the Cubs. He got hurt this year during the season, so he missed most of it. He still managed to hit 13 home runs in 26 games, and he slugged 913. He walked more than he struck out. But this, like, the risk here is obviously, well, twofold. One is, look, he's limited to first base DH only, right? So he's going to have to really, really bang. No question about the power. The question is more on the swing and miss. It's high, but I also think he has the ability to keep it to what I'm optimistic he'll keep it to a manageable level. He was only a sophomore this year. It was his second year in college baseball. His freshman year, he looked like a monster too. And I don't think it's like some super long loopy swing or anything like that. There's plenty of bat speed. When he gets off his A swing and he is barreling it, I mean, he does look like a superstar in those cases. And he'll hip balls out to any part of the field way, way out. I'm a big fan of the Cubs taking Miles Bailey with that pick. When I go to the high school side, I can give you a bat and I can give you an arm. The bat would be Kevin Roberts Jr. Who
Orioles, I figured he was going to be one that you said. You've long been a fan of him.
Yeah. Orioles fourth round pick, high school outfielder, although he was playing some infield this year as well for Mississippi. He is young for the class. He's might have just turned 18. He was 17 on draft day. Also really tall, physical, but like lean, outstanding athlete. He's probably 6'4", 6'5", well proportioned, a lot of bat speed, big power. There's going to be more power coming. He has like this reputation, or that some people will say, oh, there's like a lot of swing and miss, but it wasn't really true. At least not last summer. I'm not saying he's like this elite, pure, you know, hitter. Like, he's not Miguel Cabrera, but he didn't actually swing and miss a ton last year. And I think he has a good idea of the strike zone too. Draws a lot of walks. So I think there's still some adjustments he's going to have to make, right? Like, that's, you know, we'll see what the signing bonus is, but it's not going to be like a first round bonus. I'm reasonably certain. So, but that's why he went in the fourth round. But great athlete. He can run, throw, had a couple injuries, like including a little knee and arm issue that kind of kept him from throwing as well as he could have at times, especially last summer. But a lot of tools, a lot of athleticism. He's young for the class. Just a ton of upside if everything comes together and clicks for him.
Right. Yeah, this is a tricky question because I do think, like, in general, the superstars are probably coming within the first 10 picks of a draft. At least the guys that we can feel confident saying at this stage have superstar potential. Like, if I thought a player had superstar potential and we ranked him outside of the first three rounds, it would be like the deepest draft class of all time in some regards. So you're looking at guys for me on the hitting side that are just super toolsy, super athletic, but have real miss questions, real hit tool questions. So if you're saying like, oh, if everything works out and they're just much better hitters than I think they could be, then I could see guys like Alex Weingartner out of New Jersey. He has a really explosive tool set. He's a tremendous athlete. If he's just a much better hitter than I think he is currently, he could have really star upside. Will Gasparino is another player with just a freakish tool set who can play center field, can hit the ball to the moon, really good runner for his size. Like, if he is able to make more contact moving forward, he has superstar potential technically. Like, I think it's really, really low probability for both these guys because of my hit concerns. And so I think the safest option for me, the most realistic path for me for this question is probably just going to the high school pitching route and going with Jensen Hirschhorn, because I do think Hirschhorn is a legitimate first round talent. He's getting paid like a first round talent. He checks every box that I'm looking for a starting pitching prospect. He has three potential pluses. He has a chance to throw above average strikes. It's an elite pitching frame. He repeats it well. He's a great athlete. I just think if he continues to add strength, you don't really have to squint too hard to see what a potential number two starter could look like from him. And I think if he gets to that, then you're talking about a potential star on the mound. That feels like the most realistic option for me.
The other guy I would go with on the high school pitching side outside the top three rounds would be Ethan Washman, Twins third round pick. I really, really like him. Young for the class. He's like 6'5". Yeah. He's up to 100 miles an hour now. And he's got great capacity for being able to spin the baseball, manipulating his secondary stuff. I really liked that pick for the Twins. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. So those are a couple. And I think that is going to finish off the mailbag for today, Ben. Any other thoughts or comments before we get out of here?
No, back to our regularly scheduled programming for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. At least for a few weeks. So yeah, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for supporting Baseball America. If you haven't reviewed this show and you feel so inclined, we would appreciate a rating from you wherever you're listening to your podcast. That is always super helpful for the show. But otherwise, just keep hitting play on the Future Projection Pod as it pops into your feed. And we really appreciate it. So for Ben, I'm Carlos. We will see you guys next time. So long.